This evening we have a rather substantial reading. I think you'll find it both informative, though, and somewhat exciting. It's found in the book of Daniel, and we read the better part of chapter 2 of the Old Testament book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 2, beginning at verse number 1. Now in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. Then the king gave the command to call the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dream. So they came and stood before the king, and the king said to them, "I have had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to know the dream." Then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic, "O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will give you the interpretation." The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, "My decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made an ash heap. However, if you tell the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts, rewards, and great honor. Therefore, tell me the dream and its interpretation." They answered again and said, "Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will give its interpretation." The king answered and said, "I know for certain that you would gain time, because you see that my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there is only one decree for you, for you have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time is changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can give me its interpretation." The Chaldeans answered the king and said, "There is not a man on earth who can tell the king's matter. Therefore, no king, lord, or ruler has ever asked such things of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. It is a difficult thing that the king requests, and there is no other who can tell it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh." For this reason the king was angry and very furious, and gave the command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree went out, and they began killing the wise men. And they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Then, with counsel and wisdom, Daniel answered Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, "Why is the decree from the king so urgent?" Then Arioch made the decision known to Daniel. So Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time, that he might tell the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the decision known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. So Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we have asked of you. For you have made known to us the king's demand." Therefore Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went in and said thus to him, "Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king, and I will tell the king the interpretation." Then Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said thus to him, "I have found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation." The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, Are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, The secret which the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers cannot declare to the king, but there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets. And he has made known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these. As for you, O king, thoughts came to your mind while on your bed about what would come to pass after this. And he who reveals secrets has made known to you what will be. But as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living, but for our sakes who make known the interpretation to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your heart. You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found, and the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream. Now we will tell you the interpretation of it before the king. You, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand and has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold. But after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to yours, then another, a third kingdom of bronze which shall rule over all the earth, and the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything, and like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others, whereas you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron. The kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay, and as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. As you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and the interpretation is sure. The story there is not quite over, but we'll stop reading for now, because that's the extent of what we need from this text for our few moments this evening. This is a wonderful example of Old Testament prophecy when Jesus will speak to his apostles after his death and burial and resurrection, before his ascension back to heaven. Concerning these matters, he told them that he had already told them and was to tell them again that all things must needs be. They of necessity were to be fulfilled, which were spoken of him in the Psalms and in the prophets, in the law concerning him. And there are references of prophecy, all of which together equal more than 300 of the coming Christ, some in the law, like that prophecy that came through Moses in Deuteronomy 18 about that prophet likened to him. And many in the Psalms, like Psalm 22, that speak of this one who is despised of men, who has been forsaken of God, it seems, and who is a worm and not a man, has his feet and his hands pierced. And then the prophets are just filled with these foreshadowings of the Christ that would come. And in these prophecies, it's of interest, although it's not a matter of inspired revelation, but it is of interest that we have the number 2 popping up, Isaiah chapter 2 and Daniel chapter 2 find their fulfillment in the book of Acts in chapter 2. And I say it's not a matter of divine revelation, because these books were not divided into chapters until sometime after the time of revelation and inspiration. But it is of interest to us and help to us. Isaiah 2 speaks of the day in the last days, as the prophet puts it, when the mountain of the Lord's house will be established above the mountains, be exalted above the hills, and all nations would flow into it. And then more particularly and specifically, the prophet speaks of the word of the Lord flowing forth from Jerusalem, from Zion. And so you have there the place where the kingdom, the church, is to begin, though we are some hundreds of years before the time of our Lord's flesh. In Daniel, in chapter 2, we have not so much the where as the when these things would happen. And that goes to the dream that Nebuchadnezzar has, in which he's interpreted. The end of which, as Daniel saying, that in the days of these kings, he's moved from the gold and silver, the bronze, the iron mixed with miry clay, in the days of these kings. And you'll notice in the text we just read, most of the specific detailed information is found concerning this latter kingdom, which was the farthest away in time from Nebuchadnezzar's time than any of them. The days of these kings, the iron mixed with miry clay, they are together, but they're not really together because they don't mix well together. But they are together. In the days of these kings. And he gives hints and words of description to make it obvious to anyone paying attention that when we find ourselves in the times of our Lord, born of Mary at Bethlehem, born into the Greco-Roman world, it was clearly that. It was a time when you've got two systems, two cultures, two peoples, side by side, but they were not mixing well together. Never did, never would. The Romans had the might, the Greeks had the mind, and the philosophy, and the poetry, but during the days of these kings, something was going to happen. And of course it did, because the events of Acts chapter 2 in Jerusalem during the days of these kings have this kingdom Daniel spoke of, this house of the Lord that Isaiah spoke of, coming to full fruition. It is simply amazing, and without divine revelation explaining it, absolutely impossible to imagine this kind of foreknowledge being in the minds of anyone so many hundreds of years before the fact of the prediction's fulfillment. That's not what I want to talk about, though. That's usually the thrust of the reading we just had, and it is an important one. Any understanding of Daniel 2 that does not look at it as a precursor and a prophecy of the coming kingdom, the coming church, as described in the New Testament, misses the main point. That is the main point. But there's an underlying, undergirding, foundational point that to get to this, sometimes we overlook. Look back in the early part of our reading, beginning at verse number 20. And notice Daniel's language here. This is before, and before we even get to this, one other point before we get to this next. Have you noticed before that Daniel says, I'll tell him what his dream was, before he goes to God and gets the dream? He knows the God that he is serving. He knows what that God is capable of. And so he makes a pledge to be sent to the king before he even has found out himself what the dream itself is. Everybody else who is in the field of foretelling the future, these astrologers, these soothsayers, these magicians, these Chaldeans, they are all just charlatans. In fact, they are saying what anybody in that field would say who's just making it up. Tell us the dream. And then, they don't put it this way, but this is what they mean. Tell us the dream, we'll make up an interpretation. And they don't expect Nebuchadnezzar to tell them. Well, I can't remember the dream. You tell me the dream. You tell me the dream and the interpretation, and I'll tell you if you're right. Well, that's not quite as easy. If you tell me your dream, I can make up a story of what it might mean. Who knows if I'm right or not? But if you tell me, you know, Brother Key, I had a dream last night. Can you tell me what it was? I said, well, no, I can't tell you what you dreamed. Well, I'm just curious. I can't remember what it was. Well, I can't either. I don't know what you dreamed. These wise men of that age weren't wise enough to know that. But Daniel knew there was someone above his pay grade, as it were, the God of heaven, who knew what was in man, that knew what made us tick, that knew our thoughts, who knew our dreams, who could tell the interpretation. But between that time and the time when he speaks to the king and gives the matter in detail, notice his language beginning at verse 20. It's a message of prayer in which he describes the facts on the ground of what God knows and what God is about, the might and majesty of God as compared to the puny and the insignificant wisdom man has without him. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. The first part of verse number 21 especially is telling to me. I don't know what your views are on global warming, or now it's climate change. And I saw this past week somebody in the know is supposed to be worried now about major cooling over the next 10 years that'll give the same result as the warming was going to do a few years ago. And from him, not the whole cadre of the scientists, but from this one, he's gone now from global warming to climate change. Now he's back to global cooling, which, if you remember, predated the global warming some years ago. The consequence is the same, as he sees that we have just a few more years until annihilation because of all of this. But notice the language that Daniel uses. He changes the times and the seasons. And as we read a while ago, I put some emphasis on the word he throughout verses 21 and 22. Because that's the import of what Daniel is saying. God does these things, we don't. God knows these things, we don't, except as he chooses to reveal them to us. God is God, and he is sovereign. We are man, and we are his creation. He is the potter, we are but the clay. He's the one who changes the times and the seasons. And what that tells me is, regardless of what anybody says about what is going to happen, what the models show, what we're doing, the fact is, when it comes to the weather patterns of this planet over time, the only one really in charge is not man, surely not you and not me, but God. And the proof of that, aside from anything, and I don't mean to be getting political here, the proof of this, though, that God's in charge, is simply the fact that He is. I remember reading some time ago about how Mark Twain opined that man's always talking about the weather but never doing anything about it. Well, the reason we don't do anything about it is because we're not able to do anything about it. We've become better at forecasting. We can kind of see where the clouds are going, where they're gathering, but you'd think, well, if we're so mighty and so powerful, we see a big storm brewing, why can't we do something to divert it at least, change it at most, stop it at best? But no, all we can do is kind of see where it's going and say, get out of the way. If you want proof that God controls the weather, just try to change it. And you'll see that you can't. You can't change it. I remember some years ago, and this is on a slightly different subject, but it's the same outcome. A few years ago, I was driving back from a preaching appointment somewhere, and I was listening to the televangelist, I guess the radio evangelist on the radio, and this lady was saying that when a storm comes around my way, I get on the front porch and I put my fist up to heaven and say, I defeat you, storm, in the name of the Lord. And the storm goes away. And it was a pre-recorded message because the reason I remembered is because it was just a few days after Katrina. And talk about bad timing for a radio show. Because the first thing I thought was what everybody listening must have thought. Why weren't you down there putting your fist up and saying that before Katrina came and destroyed the better part of New Orleans? Well, the fact is she couldn't. She didn't. And no one can. Now, Jesus controlled the storms. Of course, He's God. But the times and the seasons, those are up to the Lord to change, not us. And so all the worries I might have about the future, not a one of them concern anything about climate change. And again, that has zero to do with politics. It has 100% to do with what the Bible teaches. This planet is not up to us in terms of its future. It's up to God. And I'll leave it to Him. But then this next, in verse 21 still of Daniel 2, He not only changes times and season, He removes kings and He is said to raise up kings. Now that's true generally. And we don't just mean kings, we mean anybody in authority and power. But at the time this was first spoken, the one it was first spoken to, He found out pretty quickly what it meant. Nebuchadnezzar has an interesting story through Daniel. And kings of this time in Babylon had a difficult time. Remember the story of going out and surveying the entire landscape of his kingdom and saying, this is my kingdom, look what I have done, basically. And God, for seven seasons, strikes him down to where he's no more than an animal, a beast. He eats the grass. And after seven seasons, we think probably 7 years, his sense comes back to him. God allows him to come back to what he had been. He comes to the grand conclusion, well, God's in charge and I'm not. God's the one who does this, not me. But it's not long after this prophecy here that, remember, there's a party being given and There's a handwriting on the wall. You've been weighed in the balances and found wanting. And the head of gold comes crashing down. And there's something interesting in the interpretation of the dream that in getting to the good part of the days of these kings we may overlook. Daniel says, you're the head of gold. And then he says, a kingdom inferior to you. Well, how could a kingdom inferior overcome a kingdom superior? God removes kings and raises up kings. It's not about who has the biggest army. It's not about who has the most atomic weapons. It's not about who has the best government. It doesn't matter about who has the best politicians. It doesn't matter who has the best news cycles on their side. What matters and all that matters is what's God's part? What's God's part in the entire matter? If the Bible history reveals anything to us, it's the fact that God and a few will every time outnumber a multitude of people. A great massive army. If you wonder about that, just look into the story of Gideon. Look into the story of Jericho. And those are just two of many, many others. The best known like this is the story of David and Goliath. The fact is, success in terms of nations, their rise and their fall, is not nearly so much based upon what they do in terms of might and decision making. It's a matter of what God chooses to do with them based upon their character and how he can best use them for his overall plan. This was an idea that was completely foreign to the kings of Babylon or the Medes or the Persians or the Greeks or the Romans. It was not even believed by someone like Pilate to question the very idea of someone like Christ questioning him. But looking back in history, you see, it's crystal clear. Man has always had less to do with this than God has had to do behind the scenes in orchestrating these matters. And so I know this text is about the church and the kingdom, but practically and personally speaking, two things I get from this text that help me sleep better at night. Number one, I am not worried about this world ceasing to be because of the climate changing so much that somehow we become just a barren planet, devoid of life, because of mistakes we made. No, that's not the case. Doesn't keep me awake at night. Doesn't worry me, because God determines things like that, not me, not men. But second, I don't worry a great deal about nations, even this nation, which I am concerned about directions we go, decisions we make, and the poor moral fiber that seems to be so much evident in our nation. But as to what happens next, we think we have control over it. Not so much. We think with a few votes or a few picket signs we can change the whole fabric of a nation. Not so much. The one who raises kings up and brings them down is not us and not men. It's God. And whether it's the weather or the nations, we're not nearly as powerful as we like to think we are. God is. Which tells me my job is not to worry about it. It's to trust him and do things his way and make sure I'm on his side, because that's all that matters ultimately. If you're here tonight not a Christian, change that before you leave. And if you are and have gone the wrong direction, come back before it's too late. If you need to come, come now as together we stand and sing.